What about mikvah? It's a very popular chakira. What? When does a person become pure, tahar, when he enters the mikvah? Okay, let's talk about it. A nida. Person go to mikvah for many reasons. Biblical. There are really two biblical obligations to go to for mikvah. For human beings, the only time to go to mikvah, is a nida, a woman who's a nida, and a ger tzedek. A ger tzedek cannot become a Jew until he goes into the mikvah. So let's talk about a ger for a moment. A ger tzedek, he's becoming Jewish. He goes into the mikvah, and of course he already had bris milah, and he was mekabel all of the mitzvahs. And the last step is he immerses in the mikvah. That's one type of situation. A woman, bizman hazeh, was a nida, is not released from her status until she enters the mikvah. When she comes out of the mikvah, she is tahira labala. Okay, that's the bizman hazeh. Bizman shebeis hamigdash yekayam, when a person is a tamei meis, he comes in contamination. He comes in contact with the dead, so they have to sprinkle upon him the waters of the mechatos on day 1 and day 7. He has to go to mikvah as well. But the very last time, after they sprinkle the waters on day 7, he goes to the mikvah. And when he comes out of the mikvah, he is tar. Does he need hair of shemesh? I don't know. I don't know the rules. But a person who's tamei meis must go at some point to the mikvah. And the mikvah is effective together with the waters, the sprinkling of the parah aduma, day 3, day 7, in achieving tahara. Okay, then there's also tuma sheretz. A person touches a sheretz, or there is a tumas balkeri. He's also an avatuma. Okay, those are not practical bizman hazeh, because they don't have any halachic nafkimino bizman hazeh tumas meis. Anyway, there's no way out of tumas meis bizman hazeh. Tumas shirotzim and tumas shichva zera, those things don't really they're holy matters. There's tefilas Ezra, but in halacha there is no. Well, there is another nafkamina. I just thought of it now as a sofer. A sofer is not allowed to write a shame in a sefer Torah until he goes to mikvah. Okay, that's another nafkamina nogia. So by human beings bizman hazeh, we've shown three halachic demands of mikvah: a ger tzedek, a nida, and a sofer. A baal teshuva also has to go to mikvah. I think, is that deraisa? I don't think it's deraisa. But those are three things that are for sure requirements. What else is a requirement of mikvah bizman hazeh? Kalim, new utensils. A person purchases a new utensil from a non-Jew, you must immerse these utensils in the mikvah. Now we have a problem. All of the mikvois are locked. They are shut down. And if a person acquires a new utensil, he has a real problem. The best solution, as we said before, is to sell it to a non-Jew and rent it back from him. That would be the ideal thing to do, but you have to know how to make a legal transaction with a non-Jew. It's not so simple to make a halachic legal transaction. You have to go to a rabbi and make sure you do it correctly. It was a very good idea, the rabbanim, when they sold the chametz. So there are some very good, clever rabbanim. When they sold the chametz, they also sold to the non-Jew all of the new utensils they purchased. And the rabbi then rented them back from the non-Jew for the time, whatever time, until this issue is resolved. And then the rental will come to an end, and the rabbi will have to buy back the utensils from, he has to go buy them back from the goy, the non-Jew, and then we have to re-immerse them in the mikvah. The other solution, which is not as ideal, was to be mafkir, declare as null and ownerless to the world your utensils. That's a very shvach heter, but we have no choice. There is, I remember I once heard that thought. I remember years ago, the first time I heard this, I was shocked. I remember it was Yom Tov, the person realized they did not, or not, they had a new utensil that he really needed for Yom Tov, and they forgot to be toivel it. And they asked the rabbi what to do, and the rabbi said, be mafker it, declare it ownerless. And I remember when hearing this for the very first, I was shocked. What kind of solution is that? You declare it ownerless? You don't have to be toivel it? I remember at that time I couldn't believe it, but that's the halacha, and that's the halacha. That is the halacha, because that's what has been done by the vast majority of people in the world. Acheinu b'nei Yisrael, in this last month, those who purchased new utensils for Pesach. In any event,
Rabbi Levine, some people say you could buy it, especially for Yom Tov, and not take ownership until after Yom Tov.
Okay, that's an interesting idea. You purchase it, but you don't take ownership. That's an oxymoron. To purchase, but not purchase, automatically means you're taking ownership. Okay, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Yavin Kavon, the Mashiach is not going to be Yavin Kavon, then the Mashiach shouldn't be coining it. I hear the words, like everything else, not so fast, okay? It's interesting what you're saying, and how the longest, okay, the best, certainly, without question, the ideal solution is to sell it. Like you sell the chametz, to legally sell it to the non-Jew, and then to rent it back from him. That certainly is the ideal thing to do. It's complex, because you have to know how to do it. It's not like, oh, you see a guy. I remember once there was a guy, a balabas, my father's shul, and he told my father, he sells the chametz to the guy. He does it himself. He doesn't need the rabbi. Rabbi Mayevsky, you hear? He doesn't need the rabbi. He does it himself. He sells the chametz to the guy. My father was like privately laughing. Yeah, you know how to sell the chametz to the guy. You know how complicated it is to sell the chametz to the guy? How many transactions? Is kesef koine? Is meshicha koine? Kinyan agav? Kinyan chotzer? A simta? All these, and you're buying it back, how it works exactly. You're sure you're not going to be over bal yeruha bal yimotzei? Not so fast for the average person, the layman, to go on his own and sell the chametz to the guy. don't kid yourself.
The famous story was in Bnei Brak 50 years ago when they were selling it for years to this Arab, and until he died and he left the tzava to be buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Because he's really Jewish.
All these years,
he's Jewish.
His wife said he was a Jew.
He was a Jew. Nachman Litzlan. Okay, you have all these horror stories. In any event, and unfortunately, sometimes when the rabbis sell, it's also a horror story when the rabbis sell. They don't know what they're doing, so they're Rahman al-Islam. That can also be a problem. But in any event, there is, we're getting sidetracked. There is going to the mikvah. Here is the dilemma. A chakira in the poskim. Going to the mikvah, at what moment in time do you achieve your goal? When the object or the person immerses in the mikvah? When he's submerged underwater, or when he comes out. Going into the mikvah is nothing more than just a prerequisite for coming out of the mikvah. The moment when you emerge from the mikvah is the moment when you become tahar. Lamai nafkamina, many nafkaminas. A mikvah has a minimum amount, a requirement of a minimum amount of water. What happens if you immerse in a kosher mikvah? There's the requisite volume of water. But while you are fully immersed, the water drains. Now, when you come out of the mikvah, when you remove yourself from the mikvah, there is less, the body of water that you come out of is less than 40 saw. Are you tahar? You enter into a mikvah that's exactly 40 sa, or a little bit more than 40 sa. So your immersion is good. You're fully immersed, fully submerged. And then someone drains the water, and now there's only 38 sa of water. and we're assuming you're a midget. So you're a teeny little person and you're fully immersed. You're still fully immersed in 38 saw of liquid, or you have a utensil. Utensil can be, that's very easy. You have a needle. And now someone drains it, and all you have is 38 saw. And then the utensil is removed, or the person comes out. He's only coming out of a body of water that's 38. That's not 40 saw. Is the object tahar? Is the person tahar? If you view the immersion, then you're done. If you view the coming out to be the tahara, no, then you're not tahar. Going in is only a prerequisite. What would be another nafkamina? Let's say
somebody else goes in, then Gemara gets the case. If somebody else goes in while you're leaving, and he has water on him when he left the mikvah.
That's the same idea. He's taking away. That's the same idea, right? That's the same principle. Right. Yeah, that's the same exact case. Another example. Let's say you're in the mikvah and you touch, while you are in the mikvah, you touch food. There are certain items that can never become tahar. Food. There is no possible way in this world for a food item to become tahar. If you have an apple, and the apple comes in contact with the dead. So the apple is an avatoma, right? Is that correct? I'm not even sure, is it an av, is it a rishon? And it's an avatoma. The dead is an aviyah voice. If a food comes in contact with the dead body, so the apple is an avatoma. Is there any way in this world for a person to remove tuma from an apple? Impossible. There is no way in this world that we live in to remove contamination from a food. Isn't that an amazing thing? We live in a world today where we believe that there's a solution to every problem, except for Shidduchim. There's a solution for every problem in this world. You got a problem? If you have enough money and you have enough connections, you know enough people, you can solve any problem. It's obviously a foolish thing to think, but that unfortunately we live in that frame of mind. There's got to be a solution. Well, what about contamination? Oh, go to the mikvah. You tell me, we'll find a paraduma. We'll go money for money. You'll get a paraduma even today in the year 2020. We'll find you a paraduma. We'll do the whole ceremony. We'll make you tar from Tumas Meis. But guess what? If food becomes contaminated, there's nothing you can do. Nothing. The Torah did not create a scenario to be matar the food. Here's my dilemma. The dilemma. You have an apple that's tahar, beautiful red apple. It never came in contact with any contamination whatsoever. And it falls into a mikvah. No problem. No big deal, right? It's in the mikvah. What's the problem? It fell in the mikvah. Let's take it out of the mikvah. What's the problem? It's tar. Enters into the mikvah a tamei meis. A person who is tamei meis, he immerses in the mikvah. He submerges his body. And while he's totally submerged in the mikvah, he touches that apple in the mikvah. Does the apple become tamei? So if you learn that the person becomes tahar when he goes into the mikvah, so once you're in the mikvah, you're tar. So now when you're in the mikvah and you touch the apple, nothing happens to the apple. But if you learn that the tahara only comes when you leave the mikvah, so while you're fully submerged in the mikvah, you're still tamei. If you touch the apple while you're in the mikvah, the apple becomes tamei. Because you didn't yet leave the mikvah. Okay, that would be another nafkamin. There are more nafkamin. So the Kesef Mishnah is very, very famous for telling us and bringing many proofs that the Ikar Tahara in the mikvah comes when you leave the mikvah. Going into the mikvah really is nothing more than a prerequisite to leave the mikvah. The goal is achieved when you leave the mikvah. Okay. Now this is something which is very popular. I just told you now is pretty much ordinary. This is the basic run of the mill. There's a lot more because what's the proof? Bring me rice. I don't have time to go through the rice tonight. I just want to bring out something new that I came across today. And that is, it's not so simple. What I mean it's not so simple is, number one, there is a third element of the mikvah, which no one talks about. And that is being in the mikvah. In other words, let's make things very complicated. There are not two different stages, going into the mikvah and coming out of the mikvah. There is going, entering the mikvah, the very first moment you enter the mikvah. Then there is the amount of time that you tarry, that you just remain there, submerged, doing nothing. Just do nothing. You just submerge under the water. You just hold your breath for 3 seconds. And then there is the third stage of coming out of the mikvah. Is there any value in being present? In other words, I want to argue is that going into the mikvah does not bring tahara. Coming out of the mikvah does not bring tahara. Remaining in the mikvah for a second or two, that's the moment of tahara. L'may nafkemina, if you just go in and out instantly, without delaying in the water a second, 1 second or 2 seconds, you have achieved nothing. If a person enters into the mikvah and immediately touches an apple on his way in, the second he's fully submerged, the apple is tamei. But if the person enters the mikvah and he's underwater for 2 seconds and then touches the apple is tahor. Is there any value in the moment that you are submerged? Whoever said it's only two-step process of entering and exiting. There's entering the mikvah. Maybe that accomplishes something. Remaining in the mikvah for 2 seconds is the second level. And the third level is coming out of the mikvah. Now, in this sefer that I have, this sefer, I don't know the details in two hours at a time. The Genuz is a parasha. He discusses some of these matters, and his main thrust is an incredible chiddush. He wants to be mechalek, the author of Dvorkis, between utensils and people. A utensil, when you purchase a utensil from a non-Jew, you are required to immerse the utensil in the mikvah. Why? Because the utensil, until this point in time, was under the ownership of a non-Jew. A non-Jew brings upon his property contamination. You have to remove that contamination. To remove contamination, you just have to immerse it. It's not important to come out. It's the act of immersing it in the mikvah. But when a Jew, a human being, goes into the mikvah, it's really a two-step process. You are removing the contamination and you are replacing it with holiness. A utensil, we don't find anywhere that a utensil should be holy. In the Beis HaMikdash, there are holy utensils. But utensils that we purchase in the store and we use for cooking are not holy. There's no holiness in the utensil. It's just the utensil has a lingering contamination that was owned by a non-Jew. You got to get rid of it. To get rid of it, all you need to do is immerse it in a mikvah, a 40 saw. If someone then drains the mikvah and the mikvah now has less than 40 saw, and you take it out of a mikvah of 39 saw, it's okay. Because it's not the coming out. It was being in a kosher mikvah. Was it in a kosher mikvah for a period? Yes, it was. That is enough to remove the contamination. But if you need to bring, not just remove contamination, but you need to bring tahira, purity, holiness, then you need to come out. Then you need to, all the rayos of the Kesef Mishnah, which we're not discussing, we're not going to go through, are all rayos of where you need to add to invest sanctity upon the body. To remove contamination, immersion is enough. To add sanctity, you have to come out. But here's what I want to add to the coin, to add to the equation. First of all, no, there are two things I want to add. One thing I just want to throw out into the air. I don't have any mahalach. I have to work on this. There are two different types of mikvahs. There's the mikvah that we go to today, a collection of water, a collection, and then there is a mayon, a spring. A collection of water cannot be moving. No, if the filter is on in the mikvah, they forget to turn off the filter, you got a big problem. It's not a kosher mikvah because it's not allowed to be moving. It has to be stationary. If it's a spring, a mayon, it flows. It's a kosher mikvah even when it's flowing. It's a different type of mikvah. A mayon versus a mikveh mayim versus a mayon. A mikveh mayim is a much more powerful type of mikvah. Certain types of people who are contaminated, they only can immerse in a mayon. Mayim chayim, going in a mikvah. Perhaps there's a svara to say that this hakira depends upon the type of mikvah. If you're in a regular mikveh mayim, then there just the immersion is sufficient. But when it comes to a mayon, maybe by a mayon, it's the inyan of coming out of the mayon. Okay, this has to be studied. Who needs to go into a mayon? Who needs to go into a mikveh? Who is it sufficient? Maybe the technique, this chakira in the achreinim of what is metayer, is it the coming out or the going in? Is it nafkamina? Is it a mikveh mayim or is it a mayon? And another thing is, what about the amount of time that you tarry in the mikvah? It's very, what does it say in the pasuk? He touches upon this, but doesn't develop this. I didn't develop this, but I believe there's something very true what I'm about to say. In the Parashas Metzora, it keeps on saying over and over, v'chiyitar hazami zayvay, when the zav becomes tar, v'safar lo shivas yamim l'tarasay, v'chibes v'gadav, v'rochatz b'soroy, b'mayim chayim v'toher. Why by the Metzora does it always describe his immersion in the mikveh as a rechitza, as a cleansing? V'toval. By the Kohen Gadol, it says you dip. You don't go wash yourself. It's not a time for a little rubber ducky. This is not a time of rechitza. It's a time to immerse. What's virochatz? The connotation of the word virochatz seems to imply it's not enough just to dip, to immerse. It's not enough just to come out. You have to do something in the mikveh. You have to tarry. You have to delay in the mikveh and cleanse yourself. There must be a time period that you spend just in that makom. Virochatz. There are really three elements to the mikveh. There is entering, there is being there for a period of time, and there is exiting. The fact that sometimes the Torah says vitoval, and sometimes the Torah says virochatz, seems to indicate that sometimes the Torah is coming to clarify the process. The moment of tahara is affected at the moment of delay, when you're there for that moment of the equivalent of rechitza, because when you're in submerged in the water, that is the moment of rechitza. Not when you enter, that's just a prerequisite to get into the bath. When you're in the bath, you gotta soak in the bath in order to become clean. And then you have to leave. So there are three elements. Okay, so to make things very confusing, just to put everything, there are three of them. There is entering, there is exiting, and there is being. And then there is the difference between a mayon, which is really a mitzvah. That's where it says arochas, by a mayon, a fountain, a spring, which flows from a natural body of water. And there's a mikveh mayim. How do these things work? And when you figure out how these things work, you can get even more complicated. How does it work going into in dipping into a pool of water? We know that the Chazal said if a person can't go to a mikveh for keri, is a bal keri. So if someone pours upon his head 9 kavim of mayim sheuvim, or he dips in a pool of mayim sheuvim, you go into a bathtub, that's also good. It's not as good as a mikveh, but it's also, how does that work? Does the mayim sheuvim work when it's over? Or does it work when you're being submerged? Okay, we have all different types of mikvahs. a mayon, a mikveh mayim, and then there's this thing called tes kavim of mayim shuvim. Either you pour it upon your body or you submerge in it. And that's only midrabanan, it seems. Doesn't, I don't think that's a din drabanan. How does that work? Furthermore, once you open up this lamdas, what about nitilas yodayim, when you wash your hands? At what moment in time does the tumah depart when you wash your hands? Does the tumah depart as you wash? Or does the tumah depart when the water, as it makes the impact, when the water, that's when the tumah departs? Or does the tumah depart when the water goes away, when you dry your hands? When the water departs, is that the moment when the tahara is affected? L'chaira, it's when the water touches, because, well, I don't know, not necessarily, because, you know, we wash twice. Why do you have to wash twice? When you make the bracha, you want your hands ready to be clean. So our hands already are clean, but we didn't dry them yet. But there's no longer a tumah because we washed it a second time. The second washing, can you wash your hands once? When you wash your hands once, the tumah leaves your hand and goes into the water. Then you wash it a second time to get rid of the water. The tahara really is happening the second washing, when the hands are removed from the water. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just a practical matter to get rid of the water that's contaminated, but the tahara already happened when you actually washed. The same dilemma we have when it comes to the mikvah, you can have by netilas dam. So sach hakol, you have a mikvah, you have a mayon, you have tes kav of mayim shuvim, you have netilas yodayim, we have a chakira. What exactly is the tahara? Is it the immersion? Is it the coming out? Or is it the state of being? And this applies to human beings. A tumah hayotze migufay, then you have tumah smeis, you have a mitzayra, and you have a nida, and you have tesefes kedusha of tahara, for, let's say, for Shabbos, and then you have kalim. And all of these variables are active, and it's a very big mix in trying to decipher the variables against all of the different types of people and situations. Have a wonderful day. Im Yirtzeh Hashem will resume tomorrow at 9:30. Take care.
Have a good day, everybody.
Take care.
Good day.